All this grip on me, I feel amazing. And you're so special as the occasion. And I pop champagne like it's a celebration. All across the nation. Are you ready?
P-L-A-N-T-A.
Are you ready?
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to On the Whistle and the SPS AFCON podcast. The hosts are out, man. the holders and favorites are out. what do you want us to say, man?
Bro, I honestly don't like football, man. I like there is no reason in the world that this should ever have happened. You know, like I haven't looked this up. I probably should have as a journalist, but I don't know if I've ever seen a team without a manager having sacked their manager after the most humiliating defeat in their entire nation's history, mm-hmm. come back and then win in a knockout game in the AFCON. And not just against any team, but against the team, against Senegal. Like the team is looked so comfortable, that look like they're the best in the business, look like they're, you know, better than the team that won it just a couple of years ago. Like, yeah, honestly, man, it was bonkers. It was absolutely wild. It was crazy being in the stadium, like soaking in the atmosphere after the game, because it was, yeah, just like ecstasy, shock. Like, you know, like a lot of the teams I've seen knocked out, their fans are really angry after the games. Like, you know, say for instance, when Cote d'Ivoire lost Equatorial Guinea, there's like frustration. There's a lot of emotion there. Bro, all the Senegalese fans I saw, it was just like shock. Like, just honestly, there were some who were stood there for like close to like 45 minutes, just like rooted to the, just standing there, just staring into the distance, because no one, and I mean no one, saw this coming, like in terms of anything other than just like, it was quote unquote destined to happen, because it was the most ludicrous thing that could happen, you know, like, but for every other way, it should never have happened. And that's why I love it.
I'm going to be maybe one of the outsiders. And I saw this slightly happening only because of the fact, well, there was no real, apart from some of their quality, but there was no real tactical reason why I think, okay, Ivory Coast might knock them out. It was just more of that second chance that they got. It felt destined.
No.
I mean, like, they got the, like, we all thought that they were out. You know, that's why the manager was sacked. If Ivory Coast had 4 points, Gasquet's still the manager. They had 3. You know,
facts.
So, and when I realized, I was like, okay, cool. So Saturday, I was looking at the fixtures again. I was looking at, you know, just how you hadn't really heard anything outside of the Ivorian media. Like, after that, like, it was all very quiet. Mm-hmm. It was all very, okay, you know, it was almost, the energy was almost like, we're not going to fuck this up. Like, we've got a second chance. That's what the energy felt like to me. And that's what I said on the last podcast. I was almost like, this is Senegal's final. Because if Senegal do win this, then I was like, okay, Senegal will probably win the whole tournament. That's the energy that I got. And that's how powerful hope is. Like, they had no hope. And all of a sudden, they were all the hope in the world all of a sudden. And that's what carried them over the line. Because if we're going to talk about the actual game itself, let's be honest here, like, I don't feel like Senegal even turned up even half to show half as good as they were. First 5 minutes, yeah, it was great. They scored, started like house on fire, and Ivory Coast took over.
Yeah, I think for me, the way Senegal approached the game was, for me, I understand why there's a lot of backlash against Senegal and like backlash against Ali Cissé, saying like, you know, like, how did you let this happen? You, like, Senegal played really badly. But for me, I actually thought like their game plan was really, really good until it wasn't, if that makes sense. Like, first half, like you say, they come out the traps, like Sadio Mane, that brilliant turn cross, Habib Diallo, fantastic finish. Like, they do exactly what they needed to. And like, I was speaking to a colleague before the game and was like, I just have a feeling that this is going to be exactly like the 2019 AFCON final when Senegal actually lost to Algeria. Like, Algeria scored in the second minute from a mistake. That was the game done. And like, as soon as that goal went in, I was like, oh, here we go. And Senegal like shut the game down. And that first half, I thought they were excellent. Like, it was exactly like they took one out of your guys' notebook, like the Nigerian notebook. Like, let Cote d'Ivoire have the ball, let them move it around the midfield, yeah, like they can't do anything. He'll play with that back three, blah, blah, blah. And it worked a charm, like worked a treat. But for me, it was in that second half when Cote d'Ivoire made the subs, mm-hmm. you know, when they brought on Haller and Adingra. And for me, especially Adingra, I thought Adingra was amazing. And you know, like I've had my agenda for him. Cool. Yeah, Pepe played so well. But for me, I've had this Adingra agenda. And so maybe I overblow how important he was, because I think he's the one winger who's different from all the others. You know, like Pepe, Kwame, like, you know, Boga, Bamba, like all these guys, they're all the exact same. You know, they want to isolate players. They want to dribble past them. They want to beat their man. And, you know, people are saying like, oh, this is such a, like, why wasn't Zaha here? And I'm like, yeah, fair enough. Zaha's brilliant. But like, he's the exact same. Like he wants to be out wide. He wants to isolate himself against defenders. Whereas Adingra like wants to come inside. He wants to play. He wants to move, you know? And so for me, that is where Aliou Cisse messed up. Is I think he managed the game perfectly until that moment, and he should have seen once Adingra and Haller came on that like the tide was turning, is that Cote d'Ivoire actually finally had a way to play through them. It wasn't just, you know, like I guess sterile possession. So for me it was like, yeah, it was disappointing from Senegal ultimately, but I actually thought for like 60 minutes they managed the game quite well. But then yeah, they just like got overwhelmed in terms of, you know, Cote d'Ivoire finally building that pressure and making the difference with the subs.
Yeah, and I think it's a while I agree that Senegal probably just didn't want it to be a chaotic game, hence why they wasn't as expensive. I feel that the danger of playing that way is that let's say you are, you know, in their case, pegged back, no matter what time of the game it is, it's hard to shift that momentum. Because you've conceded 10, 20 yards the entire game, and all of a sudden now you have to, like, the players are not going to be as responsive because they already had this game plan the whole time. You know what I mean? The whole game. So for them to essentially change up all of a sudden, the urgency and whatnot. Look, they're gonna have to meet Ivory Coast at that level. Ivory Coast have been at that level the entire game. You have to go meet them at a level now. It's incredibly difficult.
Yeah,
it's incredibly difficult. So I suppose I'm disappointed with Senegal that they didn't really kill the game as quickly as they did, but I was so impressed with Ivory Coast because they didn't panic. There wasn't a hint of, and I feel like a lot of that came from the coach. Like he wasn't running around like a maniac. He wasn't screaming at this guy and that guy. He was just, guys, keep believing yourself, keep playing your game. And then, you know, he earned his money because his subs, all of his subs changed the game. they all changed the game in their favor. It was one of the most enjoyable games of AFCON, and not for the chaos, but more for the, you could really see the amount of quality that both teams had because it was a low scoring game, obviously, but it wasn't low scoring because both teams couldn't finish. It was low scoring because they were both almost cancelling each other out. It was a fascinating tactical battle. Like Seri hadn't started a single game the entire AFCON. Bro. And he was the best midfielder on the pitch.
So good. He was so good. I couldn't believe it. Like, first of all, there was a couple of things, right? Because with Cote d'Ivoire, you have these, like, selection issues, right? Where the first one is at centre-back, right? Where you have these, like, just amazing amounts of centre-backs, like Ndika, Diamande, Boli, Kostanu, like, and even Wilfred Zingo, like... But then for me and a lot of other people, there was this real surprise that Kostanu didn't play at all in those first three games, because this is a guy who's starting center back at one of the best teams, if not the best performing team in Europe, in Leverkusen, you know, ball playing center back. Like, he can kind of do it all. He's physical, blah, blah, blah. And then the other one was Seri. Now, Seri, like, I wouldn't have started him coming into this tournament. For me, that, you know, that Ivorian midfield three is too good, like, of Kessié, Sangare, and Fofana. But Seri, oh my goodness, he's just so, like, sharp on the ball. Like, just one-touch passes, keeps the ball moving. Like, oh, yeah, he was brilliant. Yeah, exactly. And that was something that made such a big difference that Kessié and Sangare in particular just couldn't do, is just move the ball just that one touch around the corner. But I also love what you're talking about, like, how calm they were, because, like, that was in such contrast to the other two games. Like, I remember that game against Nigeria, like, Fofana was taking these shots from like 35 yards, like trying to do everything against Equatorial Guinea. You know, like, they let in these comical goals because they were just so desperate. And like you said, like, there was none of that. Like, Fofana was everywhere again, but he wasn't taking stupid shots. He wasn't doing nonsense. He was moving the ball well. Like, and then when he came off, you had the same with Adingra and Haller. Like, there was no panic. There was, you know, it was it was dicey, but they, you know, they didn't look like, you know, a team that was freaking out in the way that they did in those two group games.
I mean, I was just to be honest, from being Nigerian, I was glad to see obviously one of the big favorites out. But then in my head, I'm thinking now, wow, like they've quite literally got the entire nation behind them now. They redeemed themselves. Like, you've beaten the holders. You come from the brink of death and you've beaten the holders. And now everybody's back behind you. Now they might not even need a coach. Like, the crowd could just carry them through. That's what
they don't even need one.
that's what it kind of feels like in a way. Like, they just they're there now. Like, I feel like the AFCON now, as much as fun as we had now, the AFCON now has really started, because as much as we laughed and joked about them going out early kind of thing, you can't have a tournament with the host nation going out super duper early. You need them, energy needs to be, for people that are there as well, the energy needs to be maintained for as long as possible. But yeah, I was just, I was very, very impressed with everything I saw. Even the refs, is like the ref for the most pivotal decision of the game got it wrong initially. And I don't want to use the word humble because he's just doing his job, but in a way he just humbled himself. Like, okay, cool. Let's go to the VAR. There was minimal fuss. He watched it like, you know, I made a joke about him saying that he watched it way too many times just to kind of make himself look like he was doing his job. But do you know what I mean? Generally speaking, he watched it enough, convinced that, okay, he made a mistake. And that was it. You know, it was really just everything just seemed to go as well as I feel like it could have yesterday from a neutral perspective. It was a genuine great spectacle, man. Seriously.
Yeah, I think the only thing I'd say about the ref is I think the way he managed VR that one was all okay, but the early, like some of the other decisions, like the Mane one for him not getting a red card, for me that was a red card. But and I think it was Crepin Diatta, the Senegal player, was like fuming after the game when he was interviewed about them not getting a penalty for Ismaïla Sarr. And for that one, I think the ref got it right. I didn't think that was a penalty. I think it was close. But bro, for me, this is like, it's literally like a film, because not only have they like had all this not chaos, like should have been knocked out, they get his last lifeline, like in the last group game, Morocco does them a favor, blah, blah, blah. But now it's like, it's such like a narrative, because if they won their group, right, they would have played every single game up to the final in the Olympic Stadium in Abimpe, which is like, it's a beautiful stadium. It's an amazing stadium. The pitch is a bit rubbish, but the stadium itself is amazing. But it's not like a proper football stadium, because it's like, it's out of town. It's really hard to get to, like, it doesn't feel like it has much soul to it. Whereas like now, because they came third, they have to kind of essentially like go around the country. Like they had to go to Yamoussoukro. Quarterfinals, they have to go to Bouaké. I'm trying to remember where they have to go for the semifinal. I think it would be, I think they'll be back in Abidjan, but it's like this redemption story where they've had to go up north, they've had to go to the village.
Pay the respects, like, to the country.
Yeah, facts, exactly. Pay the respects. Yeah, that's facts. And then they'll come back to the Olympic Stadium, like, out for blood. Yeah. Like, honestly, like, it's literally like a movie. It's crazy.
Yeah, I'm very invested in their story now. I can't even lie to you. But let's take a quick step back to the first knockout game. Angola versus Namibia, and it was a crazy game for the simple fact that the team that went down to 10 men first ended up taking the lead, but ended up winning 3-0. I think it's arguably my favorite goal of the tournament so far. Mabalulu, he scored a finish I'm probably gonna see it tonight. I'm gonna play football later, but it's a goal you normally see in cages, like up and down, you know, well, where I live, up and down London, where it's like, it's an experimental finish. It's almost like, let me just try this because I've already scored 7 goals today in 5-a-side kind of thing. Let me just try it. And he did this in the AFCON in a knockout game. It was a stupendous finish, man. Now, what did you make of the game in general, but that goal in general as well?
Bro, that first half was like the most bonkers first half ever. You have like the keeper coming, getting sent off for handballing, like outside his box. And then you have Angola scoring with, I think, their only two shots of the first half. They scored, like, especially that first goal. Lovely, lovely team goal.
Amazing.
And then Namibia got the red card. And then Babalulu, yeah, like you say, this, like, it was very, like, very Thierry Henry-esque. He didn't do the cut-in, but the whole, like, opening up of the body and kind of whipping it into the back. Oh, but it was, like, it was such a slow finish as well. Yeah, it kind of just, like, caressed it.
It was like, I know the game's over. Let me just try this.
Exactly. Time. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
But yeah, I mean, look, Angola are through. They play. They played the next team we're going to talk about, Nigeria. They beat Cameroon, and I think Nigeria have gone about this tournament so far in the most agricultural way, and I don't mean it as a disrespect. I just mean it in the sense that Pesero's recognized quite early what this Nigeria squad is, the squad that he's. I don't feel like he understood what the squad he picked until literally after the first game, and he's like, okay, this is where we're going with it. And I'll be honest with you, no bias here, but I think Nigeria have quietly been in the top three performers, I think, so far since their first game in this tournament. They've steadily gotten better, and they've played to their strengths more and more and more. I mean, the last two group games were both 3-4-3 formation, and then all of a sudden, in the knockout game, he's gone 3-5-2. Like, Pesero is pulling out these tactical innovations, like, in real time in the tournament. He's not like he's just, you know, he's stuck in his ways, like he's adapting to the opposition. And I'm very, very pleased to see that all our forward players are not just working incredibly hard, but they're the ones making a difference. I say it all the time, you have to have your forward players, especially in tournaments like this, they're the ones that have to bail you out more often than not, because that's how tournament football is. It's way more cagey than regular season football. Do you know what I mean? So you need to have your decisive players making the decisive move. You know, Osimhen chased down for the first goal, created for Lookman. It was fantastic. The second goal happened, and again it was Lookman scoring again in the box. You know what I mean? From a chance that we more than deserve the win. But yeah, I'm just very, very pleased. And while Angola look incredibly threatening and expansive, I don't fear them. I think Nigeria have shown that they can defend, and they've shown that they can really hurt teams as well.
Yeah, I like, first of all, watching Nigeria, having never seen Osimhen play live before, watching him at this tournament has been an honor. Like, it's been a pleasure. Like, honest, like, there's been one or two players, like, I haven't seen loads of live football in my time, in my career, but like, there's certain players that when you watch them live, like, it's a pleasure. Like, I think Luka Modric was one for me seeing him live. Yeah. But like Osimhen, like the work he does, the energy he puts in, the intelligence of his movement, like he's so, so good. But Lookman was the other one that I thought was hilarious, because I remember as soon as that game kicked off, like 30 seconds into the game, I can't remember who it was, one of the Cameroonian guys just ran past him, and he just like grabbed him by the shirt and threw him down. Like, it was so reckless, like so needless. And I remember, like, I think I tweeted it as well. It's like, this guy has that dog in him today. Like, he's going to do something, because he is so motivated. Start like, he just looked full of rage. That's what I'm saying. And then he grabs the brace. But I also feel really bad for Lookman, because obviously he scores this brace, you know, like sends Nigeria through to the next round. Like, after he scores, what are the fans all cheering? Osimhen. Yeah. Osimhen. Bro, they're not even mentioning Lookman.
it happens that way. But I think it's almost kind of good anyway, because I feel like Osimhen is grown in this tournament as well, and I feel like he's showing that he can take all the arrows. You know, I mean, he can be the one to lead the team. You know, he's the one that can take all the praise, but also take all the criticism as well. Because after the first game, a lot of people were not pleased, and he's come out and he's led the team since then. Like, genuinely, he's really, really led the team, and you know, he won the penalty against Ivory Coast. Do you know what I mean? So there's that. But yeah, look, Nigeria versus Angola, I think that's arguably going to be the tie of the round. I think two teams that are in amazing form. It's going to be a great game. The Guinea derby.
I want to know
what was your reaction to Nsue missing the penalty first of all? Because I know he's a guy that you're very fond of, that you've spoken to a number of times. How did you feel on a personal level for him?
I was heartbroken. Let me tell you, as soon as, because I knew he would take the penalty as soon as they got it. And the whole time I was thinking, he's going to miss. But then as soon as he started his run-up, like the whole like hop, like skip kind of like Jorginho-esque thing, I was immediately confident again. Like, I went from like, there's no chance to like, ah, it's a goal. And even once he hit it, I thought it was going in from my angle. I thought, and so then when it hit the post, oh my days, I felt, broke my heart. It broke my heart. Like, because, yeah, like you said, like, I've done some stuff with this team. Like, I know how much it means to them. Yeah. And, like, And for me, they deserved it. Like watching, and again, this might just be my biases, but like watching that game, like Guinea are so bad going forward. Like they don't have a creative bone in their collective bodies. Like honestly, every time they got the ball, it was just lump it forward, like absolutely nothing. And like Equatorial Guinea, they didn't create many chances, but like you could, every time they were doing stuff, you could see what they were trying to do. Like, you know, third man movement, like, you know, trying to like stretch the play, you know, even their set pieces, every single one was different, you know, and that's how they got the penalty. It was like creative set piece, like creating space, and then Iban got taken. Whereas like Guinea were just like, don't get me wrong, they defend well. You know, they showed that against Cameroon, they defend well. Like, they're a solid team, and that's what you need in tournaments. But, oh man, for me, like, they did not deserve to win. Yeah. And that's harsh because I don't think Equatorial Guinea were amazing either. Like, it was definitely a 0-0 game for me, all written all over it. But also, like, as much as I feel bad for Equatorial Guinea, the court, you cannot be just like karate chopping people in the middle of a football match. Like,
it was so dramatic because all the way it happened, it was almost
bro. It was shades of was it Nigel De Jong in the 2010 World Cup? Like, just like, why are we planting studs on people's chests? Like, come on. So yeah, from that sense, like, Guinea deserved that. Equatorial Guinea deserved to lose just because of that kind of moment of stupidity.
I think it had the latest goal scored in the tournament so far, 90 plus 8 minutes.
Amazing, yeah.
And it was a great goal. It was a fantastic header.
Yeah, lovely.
But I think a game like that is easily forgettable. But I think for Guinean fans, this is probably like the biggest day of their collective football history. One of the biggest days, if not the biggest.
Facts. 100%. And not to get too serious on the podcast, but you know, like Guinea as a country has been going through hell like the last couple of years. Like they're under military dictatorship right now after a coup. They haven't had full internet access for I think 2.5 months. You know, even like we were trying to do like preview podcasts with someone from every country. We found guys from Guinea to speak to, but their internet was so bad we couldn't record because their internet. And like you see fans like holding up signs at the stadium being like, please turn on our internet. Like you said, this is the first time they've ever won a knockout game.
Yeah.
Like, and being in the stadium was something else. Like, Guinean fans are quite interesting because they're so quiet, but then as soon as anything happens, even like a cross, the nuts and the energy, you know, like the energy in that stadium, like honestly, and there's like 30 plus thousand Guineans there, I think, like, which is absurd. And like, you get that at this tournament because there's so many immigrants from all the countries around Cote d'Ivoire in this country. And that's why I love it. And even like, Burkina Faso, Mali, I can't wait to watch it for the same reason. But like, yeah, like as much as Guinea for me have been like an absolute pain to watch and pretty dire, like their fans have just been extraordinary. And like, honestly, the energy in the stadium was like electric when they won. So I think from that perspective, like, it's awesome to see. And they're going to be in the same stadium again in the Olympic stadium. So we're probably going to see the same, if not more, Guineans for that game against Congo. So like, again, I'm expecting it to be 0-0 and go to penalties or extra time, but the fans are going to be brilliant.
Yeah, I think it's actually a good point that you brought up Congo now and the fact that they won it on penalties. The game itself, I think, was one of the most, I want to say, evenly contested games. Neither side, I don't feel like were shot shy and were, you know, trying to essentially just cheat the game, if you like. They both kind of went for it, but that red card, I suppose, changed everything, because Egypt may have gone for broke had that red card not happened. You never know, but they did well to get to penalties. Now, penalties for me are a funny thing in general. I don't know why the goalkeeper's taking the eighth penalty when you still have two more players. You've lost the play, but you still got two more players ahead of him.
Yeah.
I'm not saying obviously he hasn't got the ability and whatnot, but traditionally goalkeepers are not great at penalties. And I feel like they played their hand a little bit too early, and that's probably what cost them, because you missed that now you've got to go and go to try and save one after your head's in the sky. It just looks very, very, very bad. But again, I'm pleased for another. I think this is Congo's first quarter final in what feels like forever
to me. A long, long time.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love this Congo team. I think they're a good side. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think obviously it's funny because they've drawn four games and are now in the quarterfinals, but I think they deserve to beat Morocco, they deserve to beat Zambia. Tanzania was pretty dire. But like, this is an exciting team, and like, they're one of these teams that is just kind of not like, kind of like a Nigeria light, where they don't really have great midfield, like Mutsami and Pickle, you know, they're good solid midfielders. I think they've been pretty good actually. But so they just have like these people.
That's it.
Yeah, but exactly. Then they have these like absurd amount of forwards, like, you know, like Simon Banza, who's one of the top goal scorers of Portugal. You have Silas at Stuttgart, who's having a brilliant season. You have Visa, you have Bakambu, you have Bongonda. Like, you just have this like absurd amount of talent up front, and they haven't quite got to grips with who should be playing. The Meshack Elliott was the one who scored. Obviously, he's the one who scored that wonder goal for Young Boys against Man City. Another great player. Like,
yeah.
So I think for Congo, I had them as kind of a. I had them as a cheeky semi-final run, and I'm glad to see that they're on track for that. But yeah, I'm so glad they went through and not Egypt, because I'm sick of Egypt. Like,
yeah, I mean, yeah,
these guys have won too many times.
I think even the Egyptian fans are sick of Egypt, man. That they,
yeah, facts.
they haven't been inspiring for a long time, and it's weird that it coincides with one of their greatest ever players' peak years, and you know, he's taken them to what is it, two finals or was it one final?
Yeah, two finals.
Two finals kind of thing. And it's just like, it's just this is a great advert for sometimes in football, things are just meant to be good, it's not meant to be. And that's just, you just have to accept it. There's no way for you to explain it. It just is, you know. And I think this is a really good example of that. But yeah, I think the next game now, we're getting into I want to say uncharted territory for a few teams. This is Cape Verde's. I think this is Cape Verde. Is this their first knockout run in general?
Yeah, so they've been to the knockouts before. Like last tournament, they got to the round of 16. I think in 2013 they got to the quarterfinals. But it was their first knockout win.
Yeah.
Against because obviously back in the day, all you have to do is win a group and you're already in the quarterfinals. Whereas, so this was their first. And I actually I thought this was a really good game. It was hard to watch because I was in the stadium for the Cote d'Ivoire game. But I was really impressed with Mauritania, to be honest. Like, I think Cape Verde, outside of Senegal and Morocco in the group stages, were the best team. And like, so creative, great movement. But like, Mauritania, like, who are the team, I think, who had the lowest percentage of the possession in the group stage, the like deepest block in the group stage. Like, they came at them. They were aggressive. Like, they created good chances.
But they tried.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what the issue was, is they created a couple really good chances, but it was just like the last finish, the last touch, they couldn't get it. I'm like a huge Amer Abdou stan of their coach. So like, for me, it was awesome seeing them playing, getting through the group, a group that I thought that they deserved to get through, actually. Like, before the Algeria game, I think they deserved more than 0 points. But it's a shame, because then it was just an absolutely stupid, like, decision by center back to header it back to the keeper in that situation, and like, boom, penalty, that's probably it, you're out of the tournament. This
penalty you'll see given, like, it was just, yeah. it's really unfortunate, because what I love and hate about knockout football is, I love the jeopardy, but I also hate how final it is. It's just like, you know, we think we're going to extra time, potentially penalties, and then with 2 minutes of regular time, if Mauritania are out, like, it's boom. It's just like, so
out of nowhere.
It's just so sudden that you know. Thanks. So yeah, no, shout out to them, because they're a team that I want to say, you know, respectfully, I knew incredibly little about. Genuinely, I had heard about the project they had in terms of the Football Excellence Academy that they've been trying to, you know, really push for the last, I think, maybe last decade and stuff. But outside of that, I had no real clue about them. And now I feel like the next tournament in Morocco, whoever qualifies next, nobody's going to be taken lightly, because so many teams that have made their debuts or made their debuts in the knockouts and whatnot, they're going to be fired up again thinking, you know what, we're good enough now. I'm shout to them for all. Cape Verde, I'm not counting any chickens yet, but I think they've got a deep run in them, potentially. They do, I think.
And they're playing, you know, whoever wins tonight between Morocco and South Africa. And you know, like, both Morocco and South Africa have shown that they're not like comprehensive teams, you know, and like we said, like, the knockout stage is so different from the group stage. And Cape Verde have managed that, you know, they managed that transition, you know, like, it's hard to make that transition between playing the group stage and playing the knockout stage. Same with Nigeria. Like, they managed that really, really well. And although it wasn't like a polished win in the same way that their Ghana win was, or their win against Mozambique was, like, it was a good, solid win. And I just think they have so much about them where, like, if they play Morocco, you know, who are favorites against South Africa, like, they're happy defending deep. They're happy playing more aggressive. They have players like, you know, Bebe and Cabral in particular, who can, like, hold up play, bring them, carry them out. Yeah, exactly. So, like, they just have a lot, and they have a lot of depth. You know, we saw that in the game against Egypt when they rotated the team. So, like, I think, you know, it suits them to have these games that run late. And, you know, I think Morocco are a brilliant side, but both them and South Africa don't have loads of depth in certain positions. Like, I think there's Ziyech, who's been a doubt for this game. I'm not sure if he will play, but, like, yeah, they're missing Bufal. Huh?
He was iced up on these.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, like, there's certain positions where Morocco have a lot of depth, like left wing, like Bufal is coming out, but that's fine. They have Adli, you know, Azazouli, these kind of guys. But, like, if Ziyech gets injured, they don't really have anyone who's going to step up there in the same way. Whereas Cape Verde, it feels like when they make the subs, there's not a drop in performance, despite, you know, their players all, like, generally not being, you know, not no-namers, but players who aren't very well known. So, yeah, I agree. I like, oh, man, if Cape Verde got to the semifinals, that'd be amazing. Honestly, it would be fantastic. I love it.
Yeah. Well, guys, look, we had to record today because the knockouts have not disappointed, and I thought that could be very, very... It would be bad for us to wait one more day to essentially give you guys this because, yeah, it's been fantastic. I have not... There's maybe been one or two games where I feel like maybe I've wasted my time today, but you get that every tournament. But generally speaking, every single knockout has been worth your time. Everybody seems to just be switched on, even if the teams that are going out, you know, it's not for lack of trying, basically. And everyone that's made it this far, absolutely worth their weight in gold. So yeah, I've been pleased. But yeah, Alistair, any last word before we get out of it?
Yeah, I just think, man, like, the storylines just never end at this tournament. Like you say, like, even the knockout games that have been terrible, like Equatorial Guinea game, terrible game, but it still serves up amazing drama with the penalty miss, last minute goal. Like, there's always something for us to feast on. And, like, you know, like, coming into this tournament, we would expect Morocco to comfortably beat South Africa. I can't say that anymore because of the nonsense that's happened before that. I can't even say that. So yeah, it's mad. I love it. Well, everyone should watch the AFCON. That's the only thing I'll say.
It's been a fantastic advert for football, but also I want to say it's been the almost the anti-European football. Like, it's so different to watching what I watch in domestic European football in general. It's so different. I could literally probably write 10 different articles about the differences because it's not because of a quality thing. I think it's just genuinely a cultural thing. That's what I think the main difference is. You know, it means so much more to, I feel like, the average person here. You know, and it translates to the players.
100%.
Yeah. All right then, guys. We'll be back. I suppose. After we could potentially do a preview before the semis, potentially.
That might be needed, yeah. Honestly.
okay, we'll play it back and we'll see how it goes, but we'll be back very, very soon. I've been Moss.
I've been Alistair.
Peace.
I'm working on it.
All this trip on me, I feel amazing. I mean, you're so special, it's the occasion.
Shirtless
plan. Pop champagne like it's a celebration. All across the nation. Are you ready?
PNA.